Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I came home and he was dead on my couch. It's dead. It's over. It's over. My whole life is over. He was my life. He was everything to me.
It's Tuesday and you're listening to Murder Unscripted.
My name's Ed. For the past 2 decades, I've been producing true crime content for some of your favorite networks like Hulu, Oxygen, and of course, Investigation Discovery.
And I'm Melissa, Ed's bestie and walking, talking true crime database.
We've combined my behind-the-scenes insight with Melissa's morbid curiosity to bring you a podcast that immerses you in the true crime genre like never before.
We highlight victims' cases and bring you exclusive insight from the people who lived through them, with a touch of humor to lighten even the darkest stories.
This is Murder Unscripted.
Dun dun dun.
What is up, crime crew? Murder Unscripted is here. Episode 86 of the most immersive true crime podcast on the internet. I'm your host, Ed Hydock, along with my bestie, Melissa Spivey.
Hey.
Hi, Melissa. We are in week two of 2026, which means week two of our block on exonerations. And last week I told you that ridiculously tragic case of Carol Armstrong. We haven't gotten any comments yet, but I hope somebody recognizes this story, this face, this name. And it was just so tragic for a few reasons. So first off, this young aspiring woman lost her life, and that's first and foremost. But another tragic aspect of the whole case was that the wrong person was convicted for her murder. Randy Arledge, who spent years, decades in prison for a crime he did not commit.
Okay, and I'm still pissed at those two assholes who said Randy committed the murder. And, I'm pissed at law enforcement who listened to the jailhouse snitches, and I'm pissed that David Sims guy was never held responsible for Carol's murder.
Yeah, normally I would say Melissa's pissed about something. Shocker, right?
It's a day that ends in Y.
For real. But this time your anger is 100% justified. Like, the fact that that was really the only evidence that put this guy away for years. Like, how can that be? How can that be a thing?
I'm glad you're finally taking my side. Jot this down.
Don't get used
to it. Whatever day it is, I know I won't get used to it. Well, I have another case about shitty evidence and exonerations and all that good stuff today. But before we get into it, do we have any announcements?
Oh, we do. Okay, so our Patreon is up and it is live. So please check it out. And I wanted to give a special shout out to Lena W. Welcome to Patreon, Lena, because you are the very first person to sign up, and she got it on the showrunner level. So cool. Very first Patreon. We are hitting the ground running.
There's another podcast I listen to that they make up songs about their Patreons. So all morning I've been trying to make up one for Lena, but so far I've just got Spleena. So I'm not going to go for it. I'll put some more work
give me
into
some
it
time.
And get back to you.
This is up my alley. Give me some time. Last thing, just remember to rate, like, subscribe, do all the things. Helps us out immensely. So with that, go for it.
All right. Well, back to our case. When it comes to the United States justice system, the absolute cornerstone that we all have to believe in is the statement guilty beyond reasonable doubt. Like, if we as a collective society agree that we're willing to strip someone of all their rights and possibly take their life as punishment, we have to give every defendant a fair trial. Unless I think my gut instinct says otherwise, but that's not the point in this episode. But what happens when we don't do that, like we saw last week? And I do think that judicial reform has been a big talking point over the past decade. And frankly, it is a far more complex situation than we are going to be able to cover in this month's block. But we are going to be taking a look at a few more cases that should really make us all stop and think, what if I was that person? What if I was in his shoes?
Absolutely. And I know we gave some statistics. That's something we're going to try to do more of in 2026 when we have a new block. Tie this whole block together with something bigger than just some cases. We're going to do that. So we want to give you a couple more statistics we found on the innocenceproject.org. And I'm sure most of our listeners out there are familiar with the Innocence Project. We went through it last week. I had Melissa kind of talk about what it is, what its goals are, what tools it can utilize. But if you are a newbie to the true crime genre, these guys are an organization staffed with lawyers and a lot of law students who review cases of incarcerated people to see if there's any merit of a claim of innocence. And if there is, they work their butts off trying to get help for these folks, get them back in the courtroom, and hopefully a new trial. That's the ultimate goal. I mean, the ultimate goal, I should say, is getting these people exonerated if it's a crime they did not commit.
Right.
So according to the Innocence Project's website, 27 is the average age when people are wrongfully convicted, and 45 is the average when they were exonerated. So that's an average of 18 years wrongfully accused people will spend in prison. And there were 101 additional violent crimes that were committed while an innocent person was incarcerated in place of the actual attacker, including sexual assaults and murders. And the Innocence Project has 254 victories, which totals 4,045 years their clients have collectively spent wrongly incarcerated.
When you break down the numbers like that, it's insane. Like, it's one thing to be like, oh yeah, he shouldn't have been in prison. He was there for a couple of years and he got it, whatever. But like, when you actually break down the facts and the numbers, it's wild.
It is wild. And I think when we look at it from 10,000 feet, rather than just case by case, I mean, you just hear these stories about misjustices, but then you look at the numbers as a whole and they're staggering.
I was just going to say 27. That's shocking, because if you think about it, ages 27 to 45. Now, not everyone has to get married and have kids and have a career and do, you know, all the things. But if you are going to do that, that's generally age. When you're doing it.
Right. 100%. It's really hard to think about all the reasons of why we get it wrong, which is why I am so pumped about this block of stories, because if nothing else comes of it, I know that if I ever get seated for jury duty, I will serve with a very open mind and try to really think for myself and just be willing to question everything that's presented.
Well, let's dive into today's story and we'll see how much you question along the way.
I have an idea where this case will end just because I know what we're talking about, but go ahead, let's do it.
All right. Well, on October 6, 2003, 911 received a call at 2:09 a.m. with a frantic woman on the other end screaming, "I can't look, I can't look, I can't look," and with pleas for help. And it was 27-year-old Kimberly Long. She had just returned home from a very long Sunday fun day, which had been heavily fueled by alcohol. And she had just gotten home to find her boyfriend, 31-year-old Oswaldo, who went by Ozzy Condi, on the love seat in their living room with his head covered in blood.
I feel like that's how I would react to finding someone I love in that state and having to call 911. Like, I can't look.
Oof. Well, we're going to do a slight pivot from how we normally cover cases. We aren't going to have a heavy focus on our murder victim because, kind of like last week, I did try to find more information about Ozzy in general, as well as more information on his death. But because of all this, how all of this turns out, there's still a lot that's not public. And again, like Carol last week, it does feel like Ozzy's almost been forgotten in all of this, which seems to happen a lot in these exoneration cases.
I didn't realize it, I think, until we started digging into this block. You know, yeah. I think it's surprised me for sure to not see as much information about the victims in these cases.
Yeah, it sucks because it's like, I just want to know, like, what did he do for fun, you know?
Right.
Well, I know a couple things. So being a Southern California guy, Ozzy fell in love with motorcycles, and he was actually able to turn that love into a career. And it's been said that he was a real artist when it came to the work that he did on these bikes. So I think he was on like the painting side of things, but Okay. Either way, that's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, it is.
And not only doing the art on the bikes, he loved just getting on a bike and hitting the open road and spending time with all his motorcycle buddies.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that's not a job. I feel like if he's that into bikes and that's what he's doing, he's never worked. What did they say? You never work a day in your life. I feel like that was this guy.
If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Ozzy was also the father to one biological son, as well as a bonus dad to a child that his son's mother had from a previous relationship.
Oh, cool.
And quick disclaimer, we'll be talking a bit about the relationship Ozzy was in prior to his relationship with Kim. Her name It's available in public documents. However, when she participated in a 2016 episode of 2020, she did ask to use the alias name of Cynthia. So we are going to continue with that alias as we move along through this episode.
100%. Like people, when they want an alias, they have a reason for asking for one. And this is part of her real life. I know we just tell the story. This is her life. So unless there's some reason to make a big grand reveal about somebody's legal name, we are more than happy to respect those aliases. Absolutely.
And we aren't trying to have anyone come after us either. But that too. Anyway, you know, if you hyperfix it and you gotta know her name, I'm sure you can Google it.
Sure.
So for my second disclaimer, that isn't quite a disclaimer, the more I dug into this case, the more memories of 2003 came flooding back to me, which is kind of where I mentally lived, you know, most often.
Yeah, what do you mean flooding back?
Yeah, it's true. But this was kind of a messy time if we reflect on it. This was the year of Britney and Madonna and Christina, the Kissgate, to call it, at the VMAs, yes.
Yeah.
This was height of the Juicy tracksuit, which our listeners may not know. I still have one.
Probably best. I encourage you all to not know.
It's amazing. Anyway. Speaking of fashion, the super low-rise jeans and the whale tail thong look was just everywhere, and everyone accessorized with really terrible hats of every style, mostly looking at you, Von Dutch trucker hats. They were the worst. Perez Hilton was gaining popularity when it came to celebrity gossip, and just in general, we were celebrating bad behavior from young celebrities faster than we were, like, changing out cell phones. Unless you had the Motorola Razr, because, duh, it was the freaking coolest.
Mine had a dragon on it, but go ahead.
Of course it did. That makes so much sense. But also in 2003, to top it all off, Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie were on top of the world with The Simple Life being the most popular reality TV show.
That's hot.
I thought there was brain rot today. I forgot about that time. So I don't think it's changed. I think it's the delivery method is different.
I may or may not have the show on DVD. We don't need to talk about it. It's fine. So the whole point of this little trip back to 2003, and I want to make sure everyone gets this, is that that was not a great time for women. If you look at what was happening in, like, the celebrity world, we were constantly pitting these female celebrities against each other. We had Lindsay Lohan versus Hilary Duff. We had Britney versus Christina. So that's kind of the point to my trip down memory lane. It always seemed like the media was pitting women as the bad guy. It was always the crazy ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, you were definitely, social media, I don't believe was a thing yet, but I mean, websites were doing the trash talk. You could comment under different things, but it wasn't like social ground. So you would have to go to these sites like Perez Hilton.
His website used to be, he used to draw down people's faces, the women's faces, if they were out on a date with a male celebrity. Like, it's just, it was just really sick. And I think that that whole mindset really led to a lot of the way the public looked at Kim in this case. So I want everyone to kind of keep that in mind. Ozzy was actually Kim's first love, as in they were like middle school sweethearts, which, to be honest, it's a little sketch because there's a little bit of an age gap between them that makes me uncomfortable, but I'm not either of their parents.
How much of an age difference?
So I think there was about a 4-year age difference, which, like, in the grand scheme of things, isn't a huge deal, but when one's in middle school and one's 4 years older,
yeah, given their age. Kinda, yeah, that is a big deal.
Icky. Yeah. Anyway, Kim's family ended up moving to Corona, which caused the teenage lovebirds to kind of lose track of one another. So Kim became a mom in her late teenage years, but that didn't stop her from just pushing towards her goal of becoming a nurse. That was like her ultimate goal. And then at some point, she ended up meeting and marrying a gentleman named Joe. And then Kim and Joe went on to grow their family. So from the outside looking in, it seemed like they had it all. Except that, according to Joe, their relationship could be very volatile, with Kim mostly being the aggressor in the relationship.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, Ozzy had found a passion for motorcycles, and he was building his life with his girlfriend, Cynthia. When just one day, like completely out of the blue, Kim tracked Ozzy down and showed up on his doorstep.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah, well, in spite of like 10 years passing, Ozzy and Kim couldn't deny that the spark was still there between the two of them.
10 years pass and your ex shows up on your door? That's actually kind of a cool, like, love story.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's wild. Like, they just then that caused them to make some big life changes. Like, Kim, after seeing Ozzy, she pretty much went home and she told Joe to get out. And by the end of the week, Ozzy was moving in with her.
That's kind of a love you want, right?
It's intense. It's something. Well, to be fair, I don't know if it all went down like exactly that fast, but that's the way Kim and Joe both pretty much told the story. So I think it's pretty safe to say Kim and Ozzy were not messing around. They wanted to be back together. And Joe, understandably so, was not at all happy about this.
I would say not, yeah.
Yeah, he admits he had some pretty intense feelings towards Kim and Ozzy. Understandable.
Right.
And he acted out some unhinged behaviors that included maybe some mild stalking. He did admit that he did drive by his former house and even went so far as to creep up and peek into the windows at times, which not a good look, Joe.
First of all, what constitutes mild stalking? They're a mild version?
Good question. But yeah.
I do kind of get where this guy's coming from, though. Like, he gets kicked to the curb. Your wife moves in, like, instantly with some new guy into your house around your kids. I mean, they haven't even split up yet. It's not like they were separated or living apart. And I don't know if I would go so far as to be doing drive-bys or creeping in windows, but I would definitely be interested. And not to mention that this guy, it's not like they would have their own cell phones back then where he could reach his kids or talk to them. So I do feel like he's going to want to see his kids when he wants to.
Well, yeah, you've probably never met him. Like, this all happened in such a short amount of time.
Right. It's a shock.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't get where Joe was coming from, but I do. Like, I wouldn't have done what he did, but it's understandable.
Sure.
But here's the thing. Joe wasn't the only one acting unhinged. We need to talk a little bit about Cynthia's behavior. She hated what was happening. And again, understandable. Her life completely imploded. Her man walked out and moved right in with this woman, Kim. Like, and that was that. And Cynthia had no problem back then, and still today, calling Kim the devil's child herself.
Wow.
So there was not going to be pleasant co-parenting.
No, you could tell.
No. Cynthia claims that one day her son came back from Ozzy and Kim's house, and he told his mom he saw Kim punch Ozzy.
Oh my God. So initially when you were telling the story and you were saying that Joe said Kim was the like aggressor in the relationship, I feel like I didn't know if I believed that or not, but now it sounds like there's maybe some evidence to back that up.
Well, yeah. And just for the record, I do want to say claim because while researching this, we couldn't find any proof one way or another other than to say that Cynthia said her son said that and therefore she stopped Ozzy's visitation with, with their son. So Cynthia was constantly demanding money from Ozzy and she admits that she did, in fact, many times say, "I wish I could kill her," in reference to Kim.
You can't say that stuff.
No, you can't. So Cynthia was absolutely, definitely, no questions asked, harassing Ozzy and Kim. One time, after a verbal argument on the phone with Ozzy, Cynthia got into her car, drove over to Ozzy and Kim's house. Armed with a black Sharpie, she wrote in big letters, "Deadbeat," all over his car.
Wow.
And then pulled out her backup plan and put glue in the locks of his car and followed all of this up with a handwritten letter to Kim, telling her all sorts of things, really driving home the fact that Ozzy cheats on you, and when I get done with him, you will be supporting his ass forever.
It literally, I was waiting for you to be like, he slashed all four tires like, all right, what's her name? Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was the inspiration.
I told you, the early 2000s were a messy, messy time. And I'm not saying that Kim and Ozzy handled the rekindling of their love in the best way possible, but Cynthia and Joe kind of took things to a whole nother level.
Yeah, I mean, poster child for the kind of crazy ex-girlfriend trope. Like, sorry, Cynthia.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, and because of all that crazy, Kim and Ozzy had to make some decisions. And even though they knew it would make Cynthia go even crazier, Ozzy filed a restraining order against Cynthia and filed a petition for custody of their son.
Good.
And because they were afraid of her response, Ozzy put baseball bats by the doors just in case.
She's proven that she can go off the rails. I mean, also, I feel like she could have done a lot more damage. Like, she picked the least, like, that glue will come right out. Sharpie will probably buff right out. Like, she didn't do as much as she could have done. Like, we weren't smashing windows with baseball
windshields,
bats and stuff.
Right.
Right.
Well, now that we're caught up on all the drama, it is now Sunday, October 5th. The kids were all away, and Ozzy and Kim had the day to themselves. So they decide to call up some friends and hop on the motorcycle and hit the road for what sounds like a pretty epic bar crawl, like Sunday Funday style.
Nice.
So Kim admits that they started drinking super early and that she had probably consumed 22 drinks that day.
I'm sorry, what? Like 22? 22? I think I got drunk reading that.
That's a lot.
Wow.
But that's how they rolled, I guess. So whatevs. So they ended up at their local bar, a place called Mavericks. And Kim admits that she was definitely a flirt back then, but it was never serious. However, that night, Ozzy was getting pretty annoyed with just, I guess, how flirty she was being with other guys. And he and Kim ended up getting into a fight about it, and he went home. And this part's not quite clear, but I think what happened is that their friend Jeff Dills, who was at the bar with them, he decided to, like, ride home with them to make sure they got home okay, because everyone had been drinking, tensions were high. Exactly.
Yeah.
So once they got back to Kim and Ozzy's, the fight escalated into the driveway.
Oh, my God.
So they're fighting. Their friend Jeff is, like, awkwardly standing there.
So cooler heads did not prevail on the way home.
No, they did not. Wow. And Kim admits that she said a lot of ugly comments to him and the same to her. And she took some low blows by yelling things like, you're a deadbeat and you're not working. And because he was in between jobs at the time. And she also admits that she threw a purse at him and swung her motorcycle helmet at him.
Damn.
So this is volatile.
Yeah. And why do women dig into such deep, dark corners? The deadbeat.
Don't.
I'm just saying. You're calling out the guy's job, especially if it's between jobs. Like, maybe it's because I go on hiatus sometimes. I feel attacked.
Well, realizing just how drunk Kim was, and this fight is just a mess and it's not going to get better. And he was afraid that the neighbors are going to call the cops. Jeff offers to let Kim hop on the back of his bike, and he takes her to his place just so, like, everyone can cool down. Like, let's get her out of the situation. Let's just be done.
Cue the crow.
Yeah. Well, instead of cooling down, Kim stripped down to her underwear, and they got in Jeff's hot tub when they got
Never
back
mind.
To his house.
Cue the sexy porno music, not the crow.
So, after the hot tub, Kim and Jeff decided to take things to the bedroom. Kim finally cooled down, and Jeff takes her back to her and Ozzy's home, and he drops her off. And when Kim walks into the house and gets to the living room, that's when she found Ozzy on the love seat, unresponsive, and his head was covered in blood.
Wow.
Kim ran back outside to see if Jeff was still there, but when he wasn't, that's when she placed that 911 call at 2:09 in the morning. So when police and emergency responders show up, Kim is, for lack of better words, a hot mess. So Kim goes to the police station to talk about what happened, and she's still drunk. And according to the police, though, they said that she was clear-headed enough to talk.
Which I'm surprised after 22 drinks.
Yeah, I don't know that that was the best judgment there on their part. But, well, Kim suddenly goes on this tangent about how Ozzy is the love of her life, and they were going to have a biker wedding. But unfortunately for Kim, that comment would haunt her for probably the rest of her life, but it certainly made the cops think of her as more than just a grieving girlfriend.
I came home and he was dead on my couch. It's dead. It's over. It's over. My whole life is over. He was my life. He was everything to me.
The other thing that didn't really help Kim, well, she was fairly honest during that first interview. When the police asked her if anything happened between her and Jeff, she denied it and said no, that they were just friends. And Kim was also very vague when the police asked about who they were riding with, like, throughout the day. And I guess she didn't want to name too many names, or maybe she was just too drunk that she couldn't remember everyone they had hung out with. Remember, they had been bar hopping. They probably saw, like, a lot of people.
Totally.
And while there, Kim also told the police everything that had been happening with Cynthia in the weeks and days leading up to this, and she also told them about Joe and his behavior. Well, before the police released Kim, they collected all of her clothing she was wearing, which was a black graphic biker tee with no sleeves, low-rise bootcut jeans, a black studded belt, and these chunky platform sandals. Jeff was also interviewed by police, and I have to say, he straight up threw Kim under the bus. Not only did he tell the police about their steamy hot tub session, he told them that Kim asked him not to say anything about it.
And she was like, yeah, we're just friends.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. He also told the police that Kim kept saying stuff like, I could just kick his ass about Ozzy. So then the police asked Jeff what time he took Kim home, and Jeff said he remembered looking at the clock when he got home, and it said 1:36 a.m. Mm-hmm. So it would have had to have been around 1:20 or 1:25 when he dropped her off.
And what time was the 911 call?
We'll get there in a second.
Okay.
And for Kim, this was all the police needed because now they believed they had 49 unaccounted minutes between when Jeff said he dropped her off and when Kim placed that 911 call at 2:09 a.m.
2:09. Okay, there's plenty of time mm-hmm. then to do if someone exactly. was going to do something.
So the police essentially built their theory that Kim was still so pissed off at Ozzy when she got home. She grabbed that baseball bat by the door, beat his head in, hid the bat, cleaned herself up, and then called 911. And with that theory, Kim was arrested and would go on to face 2 jury trials for the death of Ozzy.
Wow. You have to be leaving something out, though. Like, how do they come up with this theory? Like, why do they believe Jeff? You know, like, what about Cynthia and Joe? And what evidence was there linking Kim to anything?
I'm glad you asked. However, I'm going to make you wait a little bit longer.
But that's a legitimate question, right?
100%. Well, like I said, Kim would end up facing 2 juries. So during the first trial, Kim felt really confident that it was going to go in her favor because she knew she was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecution built its case all around Jeff Dill's interview and testimony. But get this, before the case went to trial, Jeff was killed, ironically, while riding his motorcycle.
You're kidding.
Well, the judge, Judge Majors, ruled that Jeff's testimony from a pre-trial hearing could be read to the jury. Which, I have questions about Kim's Sixth Amendment right with that decision, but we're going to keep moving along.
Yeah, and for here.
Yeah.
Let me just read this verbatim, what the Sixth Amendment is. Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution guarantees essential rights to individuals accused of a crime, including the right to a speedy trial, an impartial jury, and legal counsel. For those who aren't familiar with the Sixth Amendment.
Well, Kim's defense tried to cast suspicion on Joe, so the prosecution called him to testify, which helped to establish Kim having a history of violent behavior, mainly because Joe said that there had been fights between them that made him question his safety when he would go to sleep at night.
I don't blame him.
Right. Well, Kim did take the stand in her first trial, and when the case went to the jury, they came back as a hung jury, 9 in favor of Kim and 3 thinking she was guilty.
Wow, okay. So not unanimous.
Right. So the DA decided to try the case again. For the second trial, the prosecution followed the same playbook, so the defense decided this time to cast the suspicion to Cynthia. The prosecution called Cynthia to the stand, where she was able to tell the jury that she was on a date that night, which was dinner, followed by 90 minutes in a room at the Days Inn.
Oh, man. Last week, the Super 8. Today, the Days. What's next? The Econo Lodge?
I know. Well, on December 31st, 2005, the jury found Kimberly Long guilty of second-degree murder.
Man, that sucks.
I know. Now, Judge Mills was the judge for both trials, and at Kim's sentencing hearing, he would go on to say and do something that I don't think I've ever heard of. Before setting her sentence, the judge said that had this been a bench trial, meaning if it was just in front of him without a jury,
right,
he would have found Kim innocent.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting that he admitted that.
Right. I don't think I've ever heard of a judge doing that.
Yeah.
But having to follow this California state sentencing guidelines, he sentenced Kim to 15 years to life.
A jury of your peers. So, I mean, they essentially have the final say.
Yeah, they have to go with whatever the jury's saying, basically.
Mm-hmm.
However, in a really big move, he did allow Kim to stay out of jail pending the outcome of her appeal.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of first of all, it's a big statement to the prosecution. Like, you guys got this wrong. Like, really wrong.
Yeah.
Probably didn't send her to jail because he thought she'd win her appeal trying to save the county a giant lawsuit.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Hmm.
Also, and I'd like to highlight the date the jury came back with their verdict. It was New Year's Eve. Like,
really? They were looking to get out of there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like only traffic court should be held on New Year's Eve. Like,
yeah, seriously.
Everybody has the next day off. You probably have a party to get to. Like,
especially in a case with this magnitude, this isn't someone running a red light.
Yeah, I'd be like, I gotta go get my hair did. Like, I got shit to be doing. I don't have time to be deciding if people are innocent.
I mean, yeah, I guess it's not technically a holiday, but we're talking about making trials fair. I think the calendar should play a part in it.
100%. Well, after 3 years, in February 2009, Kim finally learned her fate. The California Supreme Court denied her appeal and said she had to turn herself in to start serving her sentence.
Back up a second. So if someone is found guilty, which she was, how did the judge say, like, you don't have to go to jail? Something seems really off about that.
I agree, but I mean, I guess he just really believed in her innocence.
Hmm. Like, is that even legal? You're guilty of murder, but hold on, would probably not, though. Like, we'll get back to that.
That's why this case is still so controversial.
So weird.
Now, Argo Kim, we know things have been messy, so she decided to be a little bit messy one more time. On the day she was due to turn herself in, she went camping and took 10 days to enjoy nature for what she thought would be the last time ever in her life.
3 years. So I'm trying to absorb this again. So she's left out. She gets convicted of murder and she's left out on her own for 3 years. That's insane. Yeah. Because why wouldn't they think she's a flight risk, first of all?
Well, she right. Yeah.
Like, that's a big thing. And I guess, I mean, I can't really blame her, I guess, for going camping. But like, you've been out for 3 extra years. Like, what are you doing?
I kind of laughed when she was speaking about it, but then I thought about it and I thought about the judge's words. And by letting her stay out through the appeals process, it must have been soul crushing, though, like when that decision came down on her.
Especially when you just think that you're in the clear.
So Kim finally turns herself in. And during her first phone call home to her mom, Kim said, "Does the Innocence Project know that I'm here?"
Oh, so she knew about the Innocence Project.
Yes. So Kim and her mom went to work reaching out to the California Innocence Project. And now here's where we enter our MU MVP,
ooh,
Alyssa Burkle. Alyssa was a law student at the time, but she poured through Kim's case. Like, she was a woman on a mission. So let's talk about all the things that Alyssa found that we haven't heard about yet.
Good, because there has to be something that keeps this woman out of prison, because this evidence is like nothing.
It's nothing, yeah. So I want to start with the crime scene. The police collected a cigarette butt that was found next to Ozzy, which, to remind everyone, that would have been in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Police never had the cigarette butt tested, but Alyssa did, and it came back as unknown male DNA. It didn't match Ozzy, it didn't match Kim, it didn't match any of the other key players that we've talked about.
Wow.
But unfortunately, because she couldn't tie it to one person, it's hard to say just how long that cigarette had been there. Mm-hmm. But again, if it was found near the body, one would have to believe that cigarette butt probably wasn't there for a very long time. Like, Kim and Ozzy might have partied, but they did have small kids living in the home, and it's not like the rest of that their house was a mess. So I think it's right. Fair to say it shows that someone besides Kim and Ozzy had been in the house recently.
Makes total sense.
Yeah. And again, quit smoking, y'all. This is what's going to get you caught.
See what happens.
Next, Alyssa dug into Jeff Dill's credibility. Because remember, his testimony was from a pre-trial hearing. He was never cross-examined by the defense, which in itself probably falls under a violation of the Sixth Amendment, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I feel like that's a big misstep.
Yeah, and remember, that's how the boys from the Yogurt Shop murders were able to get their convictions overturned.
Right, and same exact look, thing.
We just found out for sure they were innocent.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
So crazy. Well, Alyssa's next deep dive was looking back at what evidence Ozzy's body left behind. So Alyssa reviewed the notes from the paramedics that were on the scene that night and noted that rigor mortis is mild to moderate and that the body was cold.
Mm-hmm.
This would indicate that signs of decomp were present and that Ozzy had had to have been dead for at least an hour prior to, like, the paramedics getting there.
That's true. Yeah, you don't start to see rigor or that kind of cold body, as you always hear about, for at least an hour.
Right. And Kim's defense team failed to call a time of death expert in either of her trials, giving her grounds for the claim of ineffective counsel. And lastly, I want to take one more look at the crime scene. It was incredibly bloody. Ozzy was left covered in a massive amount of blood. It was soaked into the couch. It was all over the walls behind the couch, the floor, the ceiling, like everywhere.
Brutal.
And whoever killed him would have been covered in blood. And remember, the police collected and tested Kim's clothing that she wore that night. And that
they didn't find anything.
Right. And he confirmed what she was wearing. There was not a single speck of blood anywhere on Kim's body or that clothing.
But how does this stuff not come up in court?
I guess her trial, like her defense attorneys just didn't care that much.
That's insane, though. Because the whole defense is right here. Like, where was this during the trial?
I know.
God.
Well, with all of this new information found, Alyssa files a habeas corpus motion on Kim's behalf.
And let's see, I stop one more time just to explain what habeas corpus is. Instead of giving you my redneck definition, I'll read it for you. So habeas corpus is a legal procedure that allows individuals to challenge the legality of their detention or imprisonment, ensuring protection against unlawful confinement. Basically, a type of appeal.
Yeah. And I want to mention a few other pieces of information that police did have prior to handing the case over to the DA. Kim willingly and happily agreed to sit for and take a polygraph.
And usually guilty people don't do that.
Right. And we all know that results can't be used in a courtroom, but a lot of officers will still kind of use the results to rule someone out.
Mm-hmm.
Kimberly Long passed her polygraph.
Like, really?
Passed so well that there was no doubt that she passed it.
Interesting.
Did you lie to me when you said that you have no knowledge of the person or persons who killed your boyfriend?
No.
Probability of you being deceptive is less than 0.01%. As far as I'm concerned, this lady's telling me the truth.
Cynthia, on the other hand, her results from her polygraph came back as inconclusive.
Not surprised.
Hmm.
Not in the least.
So then John Condi, and that's Ozzy's brother, he spoke with police and he told them that on the day Ozzy was killed, Ozzy told John that Cynthia had threatened to kill him and that she wanted to slice both of their throats, meaning Ozzy and Kim's.
Wow. Mm-hmm. How many times do we like say, don't let the intrusive thoughts win? You don't say these things out loud.
Right. It's true.
How many people I want to stab on a daily basis and exactly. You just don't say it. I'm stabbing you in my mind.
Exactly. That's why I have voodoo dolls, obviously. And I forget where I got this piece of information, but there was an analysis of the evidence which included neighbors saying they heard Ozzy and Kim's fight in the driveway, which we know happened. Mm-hmm. They heard a motorcycle driving away, which would have been Kim and Jeff. Mm-hmm. Then the neighbors say they heard a motorcycle drive off again around 2 a.m., which would have corroborated Kim's timeline of getting home around 2 a.m. versus Jeff's of dropping her off at 1:20 a.m.
Yeah, I can't believe police just narrowed in on Kim. Like, sorry, Cynthia, but just because you were on a date, like, there's still a lot making you look like you had something to do with this.
Right, and even if they don't want to blame Cynthia, like, how are you blaming Kim?
Where did Kim get thrown under the bus?
And actually, one of our friends who went through a messy divorce told me that, like, no matter how mad she got, she would never say anything worse than, like, I hope he stubs his pinky toe over and over. Just on the off chance that anything were to happen to the ex, she didn't want anyone to think she had a motive.
Who told you this? Who's our mutual friend? Is it Adrian Hydock?
Yes. Well, thankfully for Kim, on August 26, 2015, the California Supreme Court accepted the motion and granted her a new trial.
Good.
With Alyssa leading her defense, Kim returned to Judge Patrick Long's courtroom with the information Alyssa presented. The prosecution ended up saying, we have new information we didn't see before. Which to me translates to, well, the judge didn't think she was guilty the first times, and now that we have this, we're going to put our tail between our legs and not try this case again.
Now you're making sense.
Mm-hmm. So Kimberly Long's second-degree murder conviction was vacated, and 10 hours later, in fresh clothing that her team had brought her, she walked out of custody as a free woman and was able to hug her parents in the fresh air.
It has to be so bittersweet. Because you know damn well you didn't do it, but you just had to pay the price. So they better have rewarded her handsomely. Like, I hope this story at the end of this says they gave her $100 million.
God, I hope so. An undisclosed amount. We like those.
Well, you're going to tell me the story. So what do you mean you hope so? Like, does she?
I don't remember what the amount was, but it's not really that much, though. I have to say, my heart totally goes out, though, to Ozzy's parents and his child and his loved ones. Because, I mean, not only did they fail Kim and destroy her life, but the police and the DA, everybody, they failed Ozzy and his family as well.
Mm-hmm. And how many years did you say? Like, I think I lost track of how many years he was actually in.
She went in 2009 and she didn't get out till 2016.
7 years. When we're talking about these other people who are in for decades, 7 years is a lot. Think about 7 years.
And for having basically no evidence.
Right. So you just sit behind bars and fight and you feel so helpless.
Right. And Kim has spoken publicly about many of the ways that this has all impacted her. And like we talked about last week, the biggest impact is the lost time with her children. They were mm-hmm. 5 and I think 9 when Ozzy was killed. And then like 9 and 12-ish when she went to prison. And then they were young adults when she was released.
Right. I was going to say they're on their way to drive, like probably driving and doing all these other things.
I mean, if you think about it, if they were 12, 19, 20, like.
Yeah.
Well, she talked about how hard it is trying to rebuild a relationship with them that never should have been damaged the way that it was. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the worst part. Like, it shouldn't have happened in the first place. Well, Kim has also shared about the professional and financial impact that this has had on her. At the time of Ozzy's death, Kim was an LVN. She was a licensed vocational nurse, and she was working and going to school to continue building her nursing career. She had to fight with the licensing board to be able to get her license reinstated.
I'll bet.
Which included needing to pay off all this debt tied to her student loans.
Right.
But she didn't have any money to do that because she had been falsely incarcerated. Like, it's such a snowball effect.
It really isn't. And it's something I didn't even think about. Like, I have bills that I pay every month. If I would just get arrested and go to jail, all of that stuff would lapse. You would come back to a mess of epic proportion.
That's
trying
what
to get
I
this
mean.
Back to you. Yeah.
Well, in spite of all the struggles she has faced since regaining her freedom, Kim has also spoken about the fact that when she went to prison, she decided to get sober and stay sober because she did reflect on the fact that alcohol was pretty much the common factor when it came to like all of the bad decisions she had made in her life.
I think that's fair.
But again, I don't feel like you should have to go to jail for 7 years to learn your lesson about drinking too much.
No,
like,
that's true.
Unless you killed someone. Like, drinking and driving. You know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly.
Right. Well, Kim has filed lawsuits against the Corona Police and several others. In 2022, she received $386,400 from the California Victim Compensation Fund. Though I do believe that there are still one or two cases that are pending and scheduled to be heard this year, like in 2026.
I don't feel like that's nearly enough money, but I do, just from talking about last week's case, Carol Armstrong, wasn't there a thing like you're owed $70,000 or something for each year?
Per year.
I know it's
Yeah.
And I know we're talking about a different state, but I feel like not only should you receive lost wages for the work that you've done, but that it should be double, if not triple, for emotional stress, the stress on your family, the missing all that time, which you will not get back. I don't care how much money you get. I know I was joking earlier, but you do not get that time back. So just paying my lost wages barely is not nearly enough for what they did to her.
No, not at all.
And the fact that it'll be 23 years later and she hasn't even been able to fully close that chapter yet. It's just nuts.
I know. And I mean, we still have no justice for Ozzy.
Right. What about him and all this?
And that's the sick part. I feel like in so many of these cases, either the cops give up or they feel like they're so deep rooted in their beliefs that the person did it, that they're like, oh, wow, she got off. Like,
yeah,
we should still be looking for who did that.
Well, and the only thing I can say is that next week, the case that I'm going to tell you, there was someone arrested. He was wrongfully convicted and sentenced and did time like on death row. And then they did catch the right guy. So you won't have to like live in suspense at the end of next week's episode.
I mean, that's good, but it's still just like, it also reminds me of, we talked about this in, I don't know, I think it was like block 3. It wasn't me. And it just all reminds me so much of Jody.
Oh yeah. Jody Laird.
Like she didn't go to prison, but she was like the court of public opinion had her labeled guilty.
Yeah. She was almost in like her own personal death row. If that even,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I think it compounds it when we don't know who actually killed this person. Like that family now has to live with that.
Right. Like Carol from last week has no justice. Ozzy has no justice. And someone's out there walking around knowing full well that they killed someone.
You know, what's funny is I just got back. I took my kids to, you know, to Dallas over the holiday break to see my aunt who lives down there. And I looked at a map.
Congrats
and
for surviving. We know that Texas, Houston especially, is.
Yeah, that was 45 years ago, though. We're in a good place now.
That's true.
But it was very interesting because I checked out a map. I was just curious where Blooming Grove, because I know we talked about it being near certain places, mm-hmm. and I looked it up and I was like, maybe an hour north of Blooming Grove. And I was going to go down. If I didn't have the kids there, if I was just out on my own venturing around, I would have went down and kind of asked around about Carol, see where the case stands, see what people think and see if they remember her. But
yeah, I'm like, where's David Sims? I want to kick his ass.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I did find out when I was editing that episode, I did find out that the one guy you asked for updates on,
Benny and Paula.
Benny and Paula. So Benny is actually in Tennessee prison right now. He's a sex offender. So he's in there for...
Of course he is.
Yes. I still couldn't find anything on Paula. So maybe she kept her life clean. I don't know.
Well, I have bad thoughts. But since we said we were not going to say these bad thoughts about them out loud, but Paula and Benny, y'all have it coming. Well, that was a crazy case. And I thought of something at the beginning when we were talking about how Joe would kind of drive by and like stalk Kim.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in high school, I learned my lesson about why you shouldn't stalk exes or boyfriends or whatever. So the one night my friend Alicia and I, we were in high school, it was like summertime, and we were mad at both of our boyfriends. So we decided to go out and see what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a flat tire and got like stranded in the middle of Collegeville at like 2 a.m. Right. We didn't have cell phones. Like,
wait, back up. You had a boyfriend?
I paid him.
I thought you were going to say, so a lesson about stalking. What's with your mustache?
Yeah. Speaking of creepers, guys, if you're watching this on YouTube, I just want to apologize for you having to see this nonsense. Ed ruined his face.
You see this?
That is his chin.
No one has seen this since 1998.
Well, I can't decide if your neck is really long or your chin is really short.
I think it's... Well, what if I go like this? What if I do that? Is that like a normal chin?
No. There's something weird about it.
What is weird about it?
Chin implant. There's not much of one.
A chin plant.
Yes. A chin plant.
What is... But it's like a perfectly normal chin. I think it's just because you haven't seen it.
I don't want to see it.
Well, I'm growing it back immediately, by the way. This can't grow quick enough. Like, I'm putting Miracle-Gro on it because...
I never thought I would miss the COVID masks, but you, sir, may want to bring those back.
Wow.
Well, if anyone does like Ed's face, he's probably going to be single soon. So when Brenda leaves him...
Oh, I hate you.
When you first sent me the picture, I was like, oh my, what is happening?
What's funny is my razor, like there's parts, I didn't even know how to shave it. Like I was covered in blood. It looked like I probably had 6 or 7 pieces of toilet paper stuck because I don't know how to shave like curved parts of my face. Like, cause I shave here and I shave here. So I'm like going over my chin. It's like, and just rip and just stubble and blood. And
does this mean we need to fix our logo and make your skeleton guy have a weird chin?
No, because he's coming back. The beard's coming back.
Okay, just good.
I need like 3 days.
3 days? I don't know if you're that manly. Maybe 6 months.
We're going to find it. I'm going to push him out.
Gross, you look constipated. Well, on that note, please like, follow, and subscribe. Although if you don't now, we understand. Why. And until next week, stay safe, stay hydrated, more so now than ever. I need to get rehydrated. I have been very sick, so I'm going back to bed. I'm wearing pajamas, but nobody can see that. So
just on the bottom PJ.
Exactly. I'm in PJ, so I'm going to go crawl back into my bed.
Smart. We'll feel better.
And remember, perverts don't wear signs that say they're perverts.
But they do wear mustaches.
But they do have weird chins. Okay, bye.